At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
DC politicians want to enact harmful credit card mandates that could take away your cash back and rewards points. Perks that stretch your budget and make life a little easier. Losing these benefits means less money for your family's everyday essentials like gas and groceries. The perks you rely on could disappear, leaving you with higher costs and fewer options. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another spring training edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Just 2 weeks left before opening day. Getting closer, we're going to be talking about the starting rotation, what that looks like for the first couple of weeks, as that has kind of come a lot clearer in the last 48, 72 hours. We're also going to start the show by kind of exploring who the leadoff guy should be. I think we know who it will be, but there are certainly options there. So we'll be getting into that as well, and perhaps a little bit of WBC at the very end. So with me tonight, Jason Kelly. Jason, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I was happy to hear you say 2 weeks until opening day, because I need some meaningful games that, you know, that aren't just the World Baseball Classic. I need meaningful Red Sox games, because spring training is starting to wear on me. It's just 2 weeks of just afternoon meaningless games, and I'm ready for them to count. So I'm excited. It should come up sooner, you know, pretty fast, but I need it.
I typically, because I'm usually home at that part of the day around 1 p.m. and I'll watch the starter go, and that's typically all I'm interested in. What's Houck looking like? What's Sale looking like? And so on and so forth. But that's all I'm really glued to. And with the WBC, I mean, it's a wonky lineup every day. You don't have Devers in there. You don't have Verdugo. I know there's a couple others that are probably not with us. Yoshida. So it's kind of a bummer that this is the first year we have him, and it's just been such a limited look so far. But yeah, so, and as far as the season starts, I'm just anxious. Like, my expectations aren't high, but I'm at the point where I just want to get it started, get it rolling, and just deal with it. And if we're better, then so be it. And, you know, I'm sure the audience will, you know, be a lot more locked in to our daily content as well. So another reminder, because I'm terrible at it, we do have a YouTube channel. We have put a lot more effort into that. My co-host Nick and I are basically doing that exclusively. So give that a look. And it's not always the same content either. We do try to mix it up. So just another lane of content if you guys are looking for it. And it's all in video form too, which is not something we do on these platforms. So, all right. So let's lead off with the leadoff question. Who do you like? Because there's a lot of debate. It's not black and white. It's not really clear. And I don't think it's necessarily the person who gets that spot is going to essentially be the long-term person in that role, but they could be. But anyway, who do you like leading off?
Yeah, I'm still good with the idea of it being Tristan Casas. And I know that Cora is high on that. You know, I remember when Yoshida was signed, a lot of people said that he was sort of the de facto choice, but he's proven to be a little bit more of a power kind of guy. And I'm not sure he's going to hit 25 to 30 home runs, but he's not this, you know, 10 home run, just take walks, get on base kind of guy. I think he's a little bit more dynamic than that. So, you know, Cora is high on Casas being there. And it's a weird spot for a rookie, but he's the right kind of guy to put there because he is an on-base guy. And he is someone that likes to grind out at bats. He likes to make the pitcher work. He doesn't go up there first pitch hacking all the time. And I think it also takes a little bit of pressure off of him because the way that that lineup is going to have to be structured with the amount of left-handed bats that they have, you don't want Casas like having to hit fifth or even sixth because it just there's always going to be a spotlight on him. In a way, it's better to put him in a spot that suits his strengths. Put him in the leadoff spot. Let him work at bats. Let him get on base that way. And hopefully, if your lineup is really churning and it's really working the way it's supposed to, he's going to get some RBI opportunities too. If the bottom half of the order does what it's supposed to do, which I think it will, then he'll get his opportunities to go up there with runners on base and prove, you know, to be a if he's a clutch guy or, you know, prove to be a run producer as well. So I think it's a good spot for him to start. I agree with what you said. I'm not sure that it'll be a permanent leadoff hitter. I think that things could change. And if Casas really takes off the way that a lot of people think he will, you don't keep your best hitter or one of your best hitters in the leadoff spot. You move him and you facilitate that so that he can best be a run producer somewhere else in the lineup. So he may not stay at number one the whole season, but I think at least to start, especially with the expectations being so low to begin the season, it's a good spot to put a rookie like him who's going to have so many eyes on him. Every at bat, Red Sox fans are going to be just honed in on him. And it's just a good opportunity for him to prove that, hey, you know, I'm much more than just this guy who's going to, everyone thinks I'm going to hit 30 to 35 home runs and be the next David Ortiz. That's not him. He's a different kind of hitter. He likes to get on base and he likes to do different things up there, likes to make pitchers work, like I said. So that's exactly who you want leading off. So I think it's a good spot to start. We'll see how long it lasts, but I'm in favor of it.
I don't hate Casas leading off. I mean, he's got all the makings of a high on base guy. Even last year, he only hit 197, but his on base was 358, 161 points higher than his average. And he's got some of the best plate discipline, you know, we've seen. Even there's veterans on this team that I wish had his plate discipline that he's already demonstrated. So I like that. He probably will get on base quite a bit. My one area of hesitancy is, or two actually, neither one are particularly major, but number one, he's the slowest runner on the team. He just is. His, I don't know what they call it, that scale that Andrew loves to talk about where it's 20 to 80, you know, where they rank, where prospects rank. He was closer to 20, if I'm not mistaken. Very, very slow runner, which is interesting because Bobby Dalbec's so fast. And so perhaps, Casas has a little bit more of a rugged frame, but you're not going to see him legging out a lot of doubles. I'm sure he'll hit some, but there'll be times where a lot of other base runners on the team probably could have legged it out in certain situations, and he's going to be held to a single. But if he gets on base, that's the important thing. The guy I like, and I'm not married to it, but I think it is a good fit, is Alex Verdugo. He had a slow start last year, but from like late May for the rest of the season, he was hitting from everywhere. He spent a lot of time in the five hole, but he was hitting up towards the top of the order at various points, especially when Kike went down, because he was essentially the de facto leadoff guy for a little while there. And while Verdugo doesn't necessarily draw a ton of walks like you would like to see, he doesn't strike out a ton either. So I just feel like he would thrive in that role. And I think he's coming into 2023 with a chip on his shoulder. You know, he got a little bit of criticism there from Alex Cora late last season. I think that was more with his defensive aspects. But He's expressed that he wouldn't mind signing an extension. There doesn't seem to be a ton of interest, at least at the moment, from the Red Sox front office. I'm not saying there should be, but, you know, he's been pretty solid, you know, playing in the corner outfield. So I just feel like I think Verdugo would embrace it and I think be more than adequate in that spot. Another thing to question, are you married to Devers in the two hole, or do you think he has to essentially be in the three hole due to righty lefty?
Yeah, I'm not married to that at all. I think that he could be, you can move him around. I'm also not married to, you have to go righty lefty, righty lefty. Like, I think that the Red Sox do have some left-handers that can hit both righties and lefties. Like, Devers can hit both. So I'm not worried about wherever he's going to go. I think Casas is trying to prove that he can hit both. Another, you know, good reason for him to be a leadoff guy. But yeah, I think Devers, you can move around. And you know, your points on Verdugo were good. I mean, his strikeouts went down last year, so that was good to see. And yeah, he doesn't draw a ton of walks, but he can hit the ball anywhere in any part of the field, which really helps him. And he's a big doubles guy. He had 39 doubles last year. So, you know, that's going to help him too. I think either of those options would be good. And it was funny, you mentioned Costas' speed. The only guy who might be slower actually is Yoshida. He's slow. Him, not only in the spring, but the few clips I've seen of him in the WBC, yeah, he's for a smaller guy, he's kind of a plodding runner. And maybe it's just because that's the way he likes to run. He just kind of coasts. Not all guys, you know, really hustle. But, yeah, he might be slower than Casas even. So, yeah, maybe another reason why Cora didn't love him as a leadoff guy. Just wants him to go up there and clear the bases if he can.
Well, there was an expectation all winter long that he was the leadoff guy. And it wasn't just, you know, within the Red Sox fan base. I was seeing stuff on MLB Network when they talked about our projected lineups. Most of them had Yoshida at the top. So I was just going with it. And I'm the biggest skeptic on our crew about him. And I'm going to be that way until he shuts me up and feeds me some crow. But Alex Cora said in recent days, and this is when it kind of got all walked back, that Yoshida himself said he's not a leadoff guy. He's never done it before, and he's more comfortable elsewhere in the lineup. So it just seemed like that was the catalyst. And I don't remember if they said during his press conference that the expectation was that he would lead off, but that's not going to happen at this point. It's off the table. I think that's why we went Casas and Verdugo. And the other interesting thing here is I think Devers and Yoshida are going to be the two middle lefties. So Devers is going to hit second or third, like we said. That puts Yoshida four or five. I mean, I think that's what it's going. So Verdugo is going to kind of bring up the rear as far as the lefties go, or eventually Casas. I don't know. But Devers is definitely going to be the second one to bat of all the lefties. And I think Yoshida shortly behind him. I am kind of married to the lefty-righty thing. I just think really good bullpens are going to shut us down late if we got two lefties back-to-back. And we don't really have, I mean, if you want a pinch hit to break that up, I mean, if you do go, you know, for instance, Casas and Devers 1-2, who's the righty bat off the bench? Well, you wouldn't even pinch hit one of them anyway, I guess, but
if you did, it'd be Ruff Snyder's your first right-hander off the bench.
Yeah, it's just not good. And he's, you know, not the worst bench guy. I was actually kind of happy they brought him back, but he's not someone that anyone's going to fear, you know, whether it's a, you know, a off-speed finesse guy that's going to be facing him or, you know, Garrett Cole. But so it's just, yeah. And Turner going down, crushes us. I mean, we got no righties. You got Arroyo, who I like, but I mean, let's face it, not another guy we're going to be afraid of. Story is out. Once he comes back, it clears it up some, but it's just really interesting to see how this is all going to come together here. Yeah. Another thing, too, this is kind of unique to the Bloom era, because in the Epstein era, you basically had Damon and Ellsbury. They were your automatic leadoff guys. There might have been 1 or 2 years of flux in there, you know, between Damon and Ellsbury. And then with Dombrowski, it was basically Mookie the whole time. So he had his leadoff guy. And, I mean, we're in the fourth year of Bloom with a role that's always been solid and concrete that has still not been defined. So it's just, I don't know. It's just one of my many frustrations, I guess. Hmm. Where does Kike fit?
Well, that's one thing I was thinking is, if Casas starts to take off, you know, and it no longer seems prudent to have him leading off, I could see Kike sliding back into that spot. He's done it before, and I know that, you know, I don't think he's the biggest fan of it, and I think his numbers may have dipped when he was in the leadoff spot, but that is an option. Again, he's a guy that does give you professional at-bats every time. You know, like, the one guy, a couple of guys who absolutely can't go there is, like, you can't put Adam Duvall in the leadoff spot. That's just a 3-pitch automatic out every single time, so you certainly don't want that. I don't think you can put either of your catchers in the leadoff spot. That's just kind of a weird thing to do. And I don't think either Alfaro or McGuire are suited for that. You know, maybe Trevor Story, when he comes back, maybe that's a guy who, just to kind of get him back in the groove of things, you put him in the leadoff spot, but his plate discipline has never been good either. So Kike is an interesting one, because I think you'll see him hitting like 7th or 8th in this lineup. But again, if Casas proves that he deserves to, you know, be in the middle of the order a little bit more, I could see them kind of messing around with, like, Kike leading off, maybe Casas hits 2nd, and then Devers 3rd, or Turner 3rd, Devers 4th, if you want to do something like that. But I think they want Devers earlier. So there's a lot of different, you know, machinations with the lineup that they could do. But at the end of the day, they're going to have to, you know, go back-to-back on some lefties, because they just have too many.
It's a huge problem. I kind of like Kike better. I'm kind of married to Devers in the 3-hole. I mean, if it doesn't happen, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Maybe I will be wrong. But ideally for me, I would put Kike 2nd for now, then Devers, then Turner, then probably Yoshida, and then, I guess, Duvall 6th. I don't like him. I like him more in the bottom 3rd, but that just speaks to what you were just saying. We have too many lefties. And here's another thing. Raimel Tapia, everybody wants him to stay, but he's a lefty. He's a lefty. Reese McGuire is a lefty. I think at this point, he's won me over. I know he's not going to hit even 10 or 12 home runs, but he's a good hitter. He's just a good hitter. And I think Connor Wong could potentially hit 20 home runs. He's hit more than that in various seasons in the minors. So a bona fide power guy. And he's not a very big guy either. He's like 5'10". And I was expecting him to be shorter than that till I looked him up. For some reason, he just looks small up there. But we just got so many lefties. Mondesi, most of the time, is going to hit lefty, you know, against righties exclusively. We'll always hit lefty. So it's just, when does it end?
Well, and keep in mind, another guy that a lot of Red Sox fans are clamoring for to get another chance is Jaron Duran, another left-handed hitter. So, I mean, it might also pave the way for maybe Dalbec does earn a spot, because he's just a righty bat. I mean, he's had a horrible spring, but, you know, at the very least, it shakes it up, and he can play 1st and 3rd. And so, you know, maybe that is a path for him, but I don't know. There are a lot of lefties. I like Tapia too. I get that he's making a case, and he's had a great spring, but you know, I don't know. It's just, again, a lot of lefties. And look, Tampa has done things like this in the past where they've said, you know what, we don't care about the righty lefty matchup. You know, famously Kevin Cash put out, you know, a whole lineup of lefties at one point. So, you know, sometimes it works. And if you have the right kind of hitters that, you know, they're not matchup problems, then that's fine. I'm not convinced that everyone in this lineup is, you know, exactly the same against a right-hander that they are a left-hander. I think that there are some guys who have some weaknesses. So it's a little tricky to figure out right now, and especially without, you know, presumably Turner. I know that he says he's going to be ready for opening day, but we'll see after what happened there. Trevor Story, you hope he's back by the timeline they say, but it's the Red Sox, so you can't trust anything they say when it comes to injuries. So without those guys, it's like you really become lefty heavy. And, you know, that could be a little bit of a concern, at least to start the year.
Not to spoil the party, but not that this is a huge thing for this year, but Emmanuel Valdez, also a lefty.
Also a lefty.
Yeah, would be one of the first ones up, I think, you know, if an injury happens. So you could have a 1-9 all lefties, I think, if you needed to. The Rays did that, I think, on Brian Bayo's debut. They knew he struggled with lefties, and Cash put out all 9 lefties, which was hilarious. Yeah. The other thing, too, about Kike is it's just kind of goofy to have him in the bottom third. I mean, he's a $10 million, you know, I was going to say center fielder, but he's going to be a shortstop this year. He was signed as a very important piece for this year. And, you know, not many bottom third of the order guys are making, you know, $10 million or more, unless they've just been a massive failure, you know, like a Jason Hayward type failure. But it's just, wow. It's just like, where are these pieces all going to fit? All right. So let's move over to starting pitching here. Corey Kluber officially announced today as the opening day starter. It was essentially obvious last week when they announced that Chris Sale would not be the opening day starter. Do you think there might be a little bit of remorse in that? Because apparently Kluber knew as early as January that he was going to be the opening day starter. And Sale has looked far and away better than I expected him to look. I mean, commanding very well. I mean, Kluber has had one bad start so far where he just couldn't locate anything and has looked great otherwise. Tanner Houck up and down. He pitches for the listening audience. That will be today on Friday. But Sale, just no blips. He had one minor league start last year, a rehab start, and he was destroying televisions. So I just, do you think in hindsight, maybe they probably should have put Sale?
Potentially, but I also, I would like to think that they told Chris, if they told Corey Kluber that long ago, then I would like to think they told Sale that long ago as well. And that Sale's just kind of, maybe he's using it as extra motivation. Say, okay, you know what? Maybe they don't consider me an ace anymore, and I'm going to prove to them that I still can be. And look, who can blame him? I mean, the guy, you know, he's barely been on the mound the last 2 years. So I don't blame him at all for saying, you know, you're not really the ace of this team anymore. Not that that's like this huge insult, but it's just the way it is. You know, and the opening day starter thing has always been, in my opinion, a little bit overrated, because as the season goes on, no one's really going to remember who started opening day. Sometimes it is the team's ace just de facto gets that start. Other times it's just matchup based or whatever, or schedule based. So I don't think that they're going to regret it. You know, hopefully Kluber doesn't go out there on opening day and get his lips ripped off or anything, but given the way he's looked, I don't think that'll happen. I think he'll give him a good start. And if Kluber, Sale is kind of your 1-2 punch going forward, and obviously we'll see how the rest of the rotation fills out after that. But, you know, given the way those two guys have looked, that's not bad.
Yeah, and Sale has been pretty humble. You know, he's said, not necessarily word for word, but he said he hasn't been the guy that they paid him to be. You know, he hasn't met the expectations. We'll see. I'm rooting for him. I really am. I mean, we're stuck with him either way. But if that changeup becomes a bit of a weapon, I think that's really what brings him back to being a top of the rotation guy. Is he going to have, what was it, 300? Did he strike out 300 people? Was that the benchmark?
Yeah.
So that those days are gone, but you know, he could be a 200 strikeout guy again, and you know, be tough. That release point is key. You know, he has the same arm slot for every pitch, and you know, from there it's just locating it. And people have pointed out that he was a two pitch guy basically the last 3-4 years. So hopefully the new changeup, you know, gets featured a lot, and he's just a very dependable guy 5 times through the order, every fifth day, I mean. So let's talk about the rest of the rotation. So for the first couple of weeks, this is how it's looking to shape up. And, I kind of Mass Live's Chris Cotillo is always on top of everything, and did a very good job today putting all of this into focus and with a lot of clarity. So Tanner Houck is expected to go in the third game against Baltimore, with Sale obviously being the second game. So Houck gets your third spot, and I don't think that was clear until today. I mean, you've got it could have been Nick Pivetta, but Cutter Crawford, I guess, is looking to be the fourth guy, as, you know, the three others, Whitlock, Bayo, and Paxton, are on the injured list. And then finally, Nick Pivetta will be the fifth starter. And this, again, is just for a couple of weeks. So it's kind of interesting, though, that Houck is, for the moment, the de facto number three for a guy who didn't have a defined role coming into camp. They told him, they said, get stretched out because we might need you to be, but they didn't make any promises to him on what his role would be.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because he's had a little bit of a tumultuous relationship with the team, I think, over the last year. I mean, there's a whole thing in, you know, with Toronto last season, and I think that, you know, pissed off the Red Sox a little bit, and then he was a very inconsistent performer until they put him in the bullpen. Then he really shined, but I think he wasn't thrilled with that. I think he made it clear he wanted to be a starter because he wants to be paid like a starter when that day comes. And it was interesting to hear that too, because I don't think he's looked that good this spring. I mean, he's had a couple of flashes, but, you know, I think it was his last start where struck out three, but then walked four and just couldn't get out of his own way. And his control was all over the place and just looked like he was completely lost up there. So for them to just say, yeah, you're the number three guy, pretty interesting, even over a guy like Nick Pivetta, who I know has really taken a step back the last year or so, but that's a guy who has given you 30 plus starts ever since he's gotten here. And he's a dependable veteran, and the team's putting seemingly more faith in Tanner Houck than they are in Nick Pivetta right now. So I thought that was interesting, but I think Houck's role will change depending on the health of those three guys you mentioned, Paxton, Bayo, Whitlock. You know, if Whitlock only has to miss one or two turns through the rotation to start the year, if he's just a 10-day IL guy and he's right back there, then I could see them, you know, looking at the first time through going, if Crawford looks good and Pivetta looks okay, they say to Houck, back in the pen you go, because that's where you're best suited. So it may not last, and, you know, hopefully he takes this and runs with it, and the rest of the spring, especially in his start today against Atlanta, that he looks really good and he proves them that, yep, I'm ready to take that number three starter role. But so far this spring, we haven't seen it. So hopefully it's a source of motivation for him, because that's a guy who, you know, like you said, his role's been so undefined, and now he has a chance to really solidify it if he wants it. So hopefully he takes it.
He's had three starts so far. His second one was very good. He had a lot of control through mostly strikes in that one. Starts number one and number three, not a ton of control. Lots of walks, like you said. I think four walks in both of those starts. So he has to figure it out. And I do feel like he is more of a starter. And last year, it happened in the bullpen, but, you know, he was struggling with his command a little bit, and then suddenly he locked in and was filthy and remained that way until he went on the injured list for the rest of the year with his back problem, which subsequently required surgery. And his last time out, I mean, he looked fine. So I was very surprised to see he was having back issues. But I think compared to a guy like Pivetta, see, when Nick Pivetta's out there, he's not just battling his opponents, he's battling himself in his own head. And I don't think Hauk has that problem. I think it's just a matter of him figuring it out, and once he does, I think he's fine. And with Hauk, it's, you know, it's commanding that third pitch consistently, and that's going to be the key for him. I've said time and time again, I don't like Whitlock as a starter. He just looks like he's very stressed when he's out there. He looks like he's on the verge of having a panic attack to me. I just don't like his body language. I don't like his demeanor. If he proves me wrong, great, because he could certainly be a high-end starter. But based on what I've seen so far, for some reason, I'm just a little bit more comfortable with Hauk, you know, in the rotation.
Yeah, I mean, I've referred to Whitlock as found money ever since they got him, because you got him in the Rule 5 from the Yankees, and, you know, it's looked like an absolute steal so far. Now, the hip injury was, you know, definitely a step back for him. But I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence as to whether or not I want him to be a starter, or I just want him to go back and be the closer, because he was so good in that role before the injury. He proved he could do it. And, you know, the ramping up to be a starter, I mean, part of the reason the Yankees gave up on him is because he had health problems. And, you know, it's obviously a hip injury, that's kind of a freak thing. It's not supposed to happen, but it's also a little concerning that a guy who's 26 years old is having hip problems. So we'll see. I hope it works. Like you, I hope he proves everyone wrong and ends up being, you know, ultimately upside wise, him or Bayo should be the number three guy, you know, if they really reach their ceiling. So that's what you hope for, is that those guys take a step forward and Whitlock especially stays healthy and takes that step forward. But I am a little bit skeptical because he hasn't been able to do it so far. So hopefully it's just a quick IL stint and he starts, you know, making starts in mid-April and proving everybody wrong. But I will admit I am a little bit skeptical on Whitlock as a starter.
Yeah, he looked good the other day in his first appearance in game action. It was, just one or two innings. He had a strikeout in there, but was commanding everything, and it was a good debut for him in spring training. So just real quick to go over the timelines here, Whitlock is expected to be back of all the injured guys the earliest, only at the most one or two turns through is what he will miss. Bayo a little bit behind him. They're saying mid-April, so that sounds to me like it could be three or four turns through. And then Paxton, who had a grade one hamstring strain on March 3rd, will not be ready in April by the looks of it. So he's looking at May. Now, hamstrings are complicated, and I'm not saying that, you know, it's necessarily an easy thing to recover from, but grade one, that is the you know, the least serious of all the grades. And so that makes this a 2-month setback for him. When he walked off the mound, he looked fine. I mean, he was walking normally. You know, I get that, you know, if it's not serious, it's not always going to be obvious, but it's just a minor injury for him is just always major, is my thing. Like, what's next? Is it going to be his shoulder? He messed up his lat last year. That's what took him out. It wasn't an elbow setback. He strained his lat muscle in his shoulder. It's just, this guy is just not a healthy guy. It's frustrating.
No, yeah, and he hasn't been for a while. And I think they're just really handling him with kid gloves. You know, I mean, he probably wants to be on a mound sooner than May, but they're probably looking at him going, dude, you've barely pitched in 3 years. And as soon as you did, you threw 9 pitches and strained your hamstring. So, you know, we don't want you throwing 18 pitches and throwing your shoulder out. So I think they're just being very cautious with him. I have absolutely no idea what you're going to get out of Paxton this year. He is one of the biggest question marks on this roster going into this season. And I know a lot of people are high on him. I don't understand why. A lot of people are, were ecstatic that he was back. I know the money isn't a ton, but if this, you know, if it's the same thing as last year where we're hearing, oh, don't worry, he's on his way back. And all of a sudden we look at the calendar and it's like July 1st and he's still down in the minors, supposedly making starts or, you know, hasn't gone on a mound yet. Then we're going to be looking at it going, what are you doing? Like, what was the point of this? This was a completely failed experiment that you then went back and said, no, let's try it again. And then it failed again. So he's a frustrating guy. I hope that we do see him in May. Hopefully maybe even earlier. But you know, he's kind of an older guy who just the injuries are racking up now. And sometimes once that train gets rolling, it just doesn't stop. So I hope that's not the case. I hope he's able to come back and be a productive, you know, back end starter for this team, but who the hell knows?
Yeah. I mean, he's very capable, like I said, of having setbacks during his rehab and then just never ending. And ironically, I did say my first reaction when he exercised his player option, which was $4 million. Scott Boris is his agent and couldn't get him a better deal than $4 million. So that's why the player option had to be triggered. And I was a little frustrated, by that, because my confidence in him has never been high being healthy. And he's another guy who, not to an extreme extent, but he's prone to losing his mechanics every now and then. And during that, he's prone to the long ball. You know, he gives up his home runs in bunches. So healthy is one thing. Pitching extremely effectively is a separate thing. And so when he exercised that player option, I said, get ready to see a lot of Cutter Crawford and Josh Winkowski. And who's in the rotation right now? Cutter Crawford. And he's looked good, and he did have some good starts last year, but my confidence is still pretty low in him. And eventually, it got bad to the point where they didn't bring him back, you know, after like mid-August. But here he is. So, all right, let's get into the WBC. What's your big take on that?
Yeah, so that became kind of a hot topic on Twitter today, especially after the Edwin Diaz injury, which is just brutal for him and for Mets fans. They just, boy, their luck just continues to be the same every single year, no matter what. But there was a lot of debate between, like, you had, what's his name, Keith Olbermann, basically tweeting out, just end the tournament, get rid of the WBC. It's stupid to begin with. Guys get hurt during it. Sent out a very aggressive tweet about it, saying, you know, it's a stupid tournament, you know, and guys only playing it because their grandmothers got laid in a country, you know, a foreign country at one point. And that's why they play the WBC. Yeah, he did. Yeah. Wow. You pull up the tweet, it's pretty aggressive. So it's basically been like Keith Olbermann and KFC from Barstool against like the Carabases of the world, who are like, the World Baseball Classic's the greatest tournament, you know, in sports. I can't believe people are bashing this. You're stupid if you don't like it. And my whole take on it is, we were talking before we went on the air, it's like, I haven't really watched a ton of it. I'll be honest, I can't really get into it. I'm not a big rah-rah Team USA guy, so that's part of it. Like, I don't root for the USA in international tournaments. It's just kind of a thing. They annoy me. and I hate that the World Baseball Classic is like the old rules. So there's no pitch clock or anything like that. So the games take forever. I was going to watch it. I looked at the first round of games and it was like, you know, 11 o'clock at night on FS2. And it's like, okay, well, I'm not going to stay up till 2-3 o'clock in the morning to watch some guy from Nicaragua, you know, sit on the mound and scratch his nuts for 20 minutes before he throws a pitch. Like, I can't get into it. I know I should. I've seen some clips. It looks entertaining. The crowds look like they're really into it. I just don't care that much. I care more about the MLB regular season. I care more about the Red Sox. So the WBC is just kind of a distraction to me. And I'll be honest, like, I'm glad that Devers is coming back. You know, I'm sad that his team got eliminated, but I'm glad that he'll be back with the Red Sox and, you know, can really focus on the regular season ahead of him. It's just not for me, but I think the whole debate today just got so out of control on both sides. I mean, again, like, Olbermann's tweet was real bad. If you look up KFC Barstool, he's been even worse. He's rooting for guys to get hurt now. He's basically saying, like, all these teams that are left, if your team has a superstar on them, I hope they all tear their ACLs. So they were on one extreme, and then you had Carrabas basically saying, it's better than the World Cup, it's better than the Super Bowl, it's better than the World Series, and you're dumb if you don't like it, which is stupid too. So I don't know. How often is the World Baseball Classic? Is it every 2 years?
I think it's every third, if I'm not mistaken.
Every third.
Third or fourth, let's put it that way.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's luckily we won't have to worry about it again for a while, but it's just, I don't know. I'm just kind of neutral to it. I don't get all jazzed up about it, and I'm kind of ready for it to just be over and for all these guys to get back and just get to the MLB regular season.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have strong feelings one way or the other. Keith Olbermann's comments are interesting, and he was basically the face of MSNBC. So the fact that he wants to cancel something just kind of fits that that side of the spectrum. You know, and then for the guys that like Carrabas, it's better than the Super Bowl. Obviously, that's an extreme. This is what I think. It sucks that Edwin Diaz blew out his knee. That sucks. And I don't even hate the Mets. I think they're a fascinating team, and it's going to be interesting to see if Steve Cohen can buy a championship, because that's hard. That's hard to do. You look at the Astros that are basically a mid-market team. You know, they do spend money here and there, but they're not a top 5, 6, or 7 payroll. Neither are the Braves, and you know, they've made some good runs here. The Nationals, I'm guessing they were close to the top when they won it. Red Sox were way over the top in 2018, but that's because we had a lot of dead money. Pedroia, Sandoval, I know there was one or two others on there. By that point, Hanley had actually been DFA'd, so he was dead money. And so it's not even the biggest markets that are winning these, you know, titles necessarily. So, I like what Steve Cohen is doing though, because it's interesting. It makes you pay attention, and they're fascinating. And they just gave, Edwin Diaz, their closer, a 5-year, $105 million deal. So he's going to miss, at least the full 2023 season. I wouldn't be shocked if he's not ready to go right away in 2024, but it sucks. But that's a fluke. I think players can be a little bit smarter when they're celebrating, and it's not worth canceling an entire concept. I would not do that. As far as the exhibition game and whatnot, I mean, people will fight about anything. It's just, people will fight about literally anything. Ultimately, if they're filling up stadiums, that's a good thing. And I support that. That's good, you know, for baseball. So the format is confusing. I still don't fully understand it. I know they're all put into pools, and then you advance out of your pools, and now it's going to be bracket style, one and done. I can't tell. We were talking before we came on. I think Japan doesn't have a quarterfinal match, if I understand it correctly. They get a bye to the semifinals. So I'm a little confused still, but it is what it is. And as far as the Dominican Republic losing, listen to this lineup. I'll just go through their 1 through 9, starting at number 1. Julio Rodriguez, Juan Soto, Manny Machado, Teoscar Hernandez, Rafi Devers, who is hitting in the 5 spot, by the way, Wander Franco, Jeremy Pena, Jamir Candelario, and then Gary Sanchez rounded it out, but you've got 5 or 6 Hall of Famers in there, most likely. That's like, that's insane. Like, the Dominican Republic isn't a big island. I don't know what their population is. I'd be surprised if it's more than 1 million or 2. And for them to be a hotbed to produce this level of talent, and this is where Pedro Martinez comes from, Brian Bayo, like there's pitchers as well that have emerged from there. David Ortiz from the Dominican Republic. It's just, it's amazing how they just crank out all this talent.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible that they got exited out of the tournament. Exactly. Because they were the favorite. Yeah.
Yeah. And Team USA, I mean, that's who I'm rooting for. I get, like, the audience knows where I stand. I'm not a big government guy by any means. So I can certainly sympathize with some people. But no one, our best pitcher, I think, is Lance Lynn. Like, Clayton Kershaw was scheduled to be in there, but I think he had some injury, just something super minor, but they didn't want to risk it with him. And I get it. But we just have no pitching. And I think that's going to potentially sink us here. We already lost. We got blown out by Team Mexico. We just barely beat Colombia. I think we beat them by a run yesterday. And then we blew out Canada, who does not look like a good team either, especially with the pitching. But yeah, so it doesn't look like we're built very well. And then we're going to face Venezuela right away. And it's one and done from here out. I'm clear on that. You lose any games from here out, you're out of the tournament. And Venezuela hasn't lost at all. They're, undefeated through it. So I just, for those really behind Team USA, it just sounds like a long shot to me. And Japan looks very good. I don't think losing Diaz is like a massive blow to Team Puerto Rico necessarily. But yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I probably will catch as much as I can from here. And I think it's just one game per day from here out, if I'm not mistaken. So it's not like you're trying to keep up with multiple things at once. So it could particularly be a little bit more enjoyable. But we'll see.
Hey, at least you don't have to root for Team Great Britain like I did. Boy, do they stink.
your father is from Britain, as you've stated.
Yeah.
And the other thing about Team Britain that people will not let go of is they have the ugliest uniforms. Man. They're just so plain, and it, like all the memes say, it looks like they typed out something on a computer with Arial Black, the most generic font you could possibly pick. And then they slap that onto the jerseys. That's exactly what it looks like. And they don't even line up when they're buttoned up. There's like awkward spaces, like in the middle of the word great and then in the middle of the word Britain. It's just an ugly uniform. And even Mexico wore one. The one they wore when they beat us, I thought was a nice looking uniform. But then they wore another one. I forget who they were playing, either last night or the night before. Just that, I thought that one was ugly. And I mean, these teams, because of the pandemic, had 6 years to come up with something cool, and I just think they whiffed a little bit on a massive stage. And there was one report I saw somewhere that that all of these games worldwide have crushed the World Series as far as audience. So that's another reason why I'm supportive of it. I mean, if you're getting those numbers and you're selling out stadiums, I think it's worth continuing. But yeah, so I just, the uniforms are just a big whiff on Britain's part.
Yeah, definitely not fashionistas, the British, that's for sure.
Yeah, and there's another guy, his name's Harry Ford, and I tweeted out, I'm like, wow, is that the most British sounding name ever? It just sounds British. And it turns out he was born in America, but both of his parents were born in Britain, so that's how he gets to be Team Britain. And then in doing some research last night for fantasy baseball, I learned that he's actually the number one prospect in the Seattle Mariners system. So I thought that was interesting. And he's a catcher apparently. So yeah. All right. So I guess we will wrap on that. We'll probably be back on Sunday per the usual. And as the season gets ramped up here in opening day, commences, we'll be back to our normal 4 shows per week. So things are about to get pretty busy with the Bastards here, so be on the lookout for all of that. And everyone have a good rest of your week. Today for the listening audience is St. Patty's Day, so many of you are going to be hung over on Saturday morning, but have a good weekend nonetheless. Take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.